You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense, stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca.
Anze Kopitar. He's not giving you a big announcement. It's like 12 hours as Low Tide on a show at 1:48 today announced that he needs Monday off because he's getting married tomorrow. Al, congratulations. How you doing?
I'm good. I told Connor I'd only take the half day off, but he gave me the full day. Appreciate it.
Well, that's good. Well, yeah, who'd want to only work 1 hour of the show, Al? That's, you know, which hour would you have chosen to work? That would have been the real question.
That's true.
Yes. Well, Al, let's talk a few. Let's start with the green and gold. Obviously a disappointing loss, but there's lots of positives about it. I'm curious to see if they finally go away from their attempt to be a power blocking team, because their O-line's not built to be power blockers. They are much more of a team that that I think can do more slide blocks, some more screens and stuff. And I think if they do that, they'll have more success.
Yeah, and I think they are, we talked about it on Monday, I think offensively the play calling is a little vanilla sometimes. Not always, but just a little bit. And you know, if you change it up a little bit, then it makes it more difficult for the other team to kind of predict or play call against you. And I think that if the Elks are a little more unpredictable, chances are that the plays they run that are straight up plays will have more success, because the defense may be cheating for what they don't know, as opposed to what they're pretty sure of.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. The the Tiger Cats, obviously, Bo Levi and Mitchell, they came in here, they won a game, and that was another game, funny enough, that the Elks kind of lost themselves when they dropped the ball in the end zone late in that game. Where do you come out on Fajardo? Do you need to see him take a few more, 50-50 balls, kind of gun something in there? It seems like he completes a lot of the passes, but then if something's kind of open but he's not secure, he'll just take a sack, and that was crushing him last game.
Yeah, and I think that not like every play. I mean, I watched Ralph Rock when he threw, two long bombs and they punted. He did that for 2 years when he came into the league. You don't need to do that. But there are points in the game where, taking a chance is how you win. Some of the great football games ever have been won because a team decided, okay, you know what? Everybody's kind of lulled to a false sense of security. I'm going to make a throw that is a 50-50 ball, and I'm going to count on my ability and the ability of the receiver to make that play. You can't play it safe all the time, because that means you're not the creativity isn't there and the belief in yourself isn't there. And Fajardo's a veteran guy. They've got to get more yards, down the field, I think, passing wise. And however they do that doesn't really matter, but that's one way to do it.
Switching to the orders, Al, the Zach Hyman injury, two ways to look at it. Obviously, it's disappointing, but it creates openings, specifically 5-on-5 with McDavid, and then another net front presence on the power play. I don't know if there's one guy that's going to do both. It might have different guys. So who would be your first? Let's start with the 5-on-5 winger. Which one do you think is going to get the most time in that month of October with McDavid on the right side?
Well, you've got me curious about Tomasek, just because of it. Like, I know you've written and talked about his shot, and that might be a real addition to that line. I've always liked Frederick. He didn't, people didn't see him in Edmonton the way he can play. I'd love to see him there. I don't think he will get that job, but I'd love to see him there. Savoy is apparently playing brilliantly well. I'd like to see at least a little bit of him in the preseason there. And then after that, I mean, you've got all kinds of veteran options. I wonder where they're going to play Adam Henrique if Frederick is going to play center, which may happen. Then where do you play Frederick? So they've got some options, and of course they also have Nuge, who's sort of the utility guy on a top line or on the third line. So they've got some options. I'm curious about, you've got me interested in Tomasek just because of the shot.
Yeah, well, he's big body, and I wrote the article today at Orders Nation, and I was looking at, who are the best candidates for, but who's had success playing with McDavid? Obviously, we know Pat Maroon did for a short period of time and never really, recaptured anywhere else. Zach Hyman's had success, a lot of it. He actually has the most 5-on-5 goals in Edmonton the last 3 years, right? And he's, you know, 6'2", 210-pound guy, straight-line player, very good at retrieving pucks, fast skater. Now, Maroon wasn't, you know, overly quick, but he was really good in board battles, right, and big in front of the net. And the other guy, Al, for the calendar year of 2019, Zach Cassian was a top-line right winger at 5-on-5. He was 13th in the entire NHL in those 82 games in goals, tied with Pasternak and Huberdeau and Kyle Connor, for goodness sakes. And then he had 45 points. Like, he was great 5-on-5. And what was he do? Big body, straight-line player. Now, it didn't last, and the owners don't need it to last all year long, although it would be a bonus. And so, to me, Tomasik and Frederick fit that bill, because Frederick's a big body who skates up and down. Tomasik, a bigger body. I don't know if he's as physical as those guys. I don't know how his board play is. But I see the size, and bigger guys seem to create a little bit more space for McDavid.
Yeah, and I think that that's a point well taken. You know, you can have you know, high end skill guys with McDavid, but guys who play a simple game and you know, Maroon's thing was, I mean, people, you know, indicted him a king, but you know, two things that happened for him was Lucic did not play well with McDavid at 5-on-5, and then Maroon just learned to go to the net, and he could win some battles along the wall, and he was tough, but he played a really simple game with McDavid, and I think Frederick could certainly do that, and I'm curious about the shooter in the Swedish scorer too. I think that would be, you know, this is an opportunity that nobody wants the Hyman injury to be there, and everybody wants him back. But this is an opportunity to experiment. It'll be interesting to see what Chris Knobloch, you know, runs with here in the first part of the regular season.
Yeah. Now, what about the net front presence on the power play?
Well, I mean, they've got some big guys. Frederick, for me, is a bigger guy. Pod Colson's a bigger guy. Who has the really good hands? Because you... The net front presence, people talk about always blocking out the sun and tipped off them, but sometimes there's just pucks lying there. You want somebody with quick hand, who has size and has quick hands. So, you know, they've got some candidates. I don't know who's going to end up with that job, but you want somebody who's fearless and can find the puck in tight spots and make a quick play. And those are important goals that you score. They used to call them garbage goals, but they're important.
Some people don't like my suggestion, Al. But my suggestion would be Adam Henrique. He's done it the most. He's had success on a power play. He's had 9 years of averaging over 2 minutes a game on the power play. And now he's been on power plays that, you know, didn't have McDavid and Draisaitl and others. And he's better around the net, right? Like, I look at Ike Howard, I'm like, could he be a power play guy? Sure, but he's not a net front presence player. Matt Savoy's not a net front presence player. Right, Frederick, sure. Tomasik, maybe. But even him, like when I watched him and Pod Colson, when Pod Colson was in Abbotsford and Tomasik was in Europe, those guys actually had really good one-timers. They were more in the shooting position. So I wonder if maybe we see, you know, like a split almost where different guys are moving around just so they can give teams different looks, or, you know, rather than just have a full-fledged guy for a month. Now, that would mean you have to change a lot, so maybe that's an idiotic idea. By me, it's very plausible. But I don't know if they have a guy who's like a natural net front other than Henrique, and that's why I might try him there.
Well, the thing about Henrique, I know, you know, we all have the tendency to do this, where a guy has a year where more was expected, and they're like, okay, well, this guy's, you know, he's pretty much done. He's 34. But that's not really how it works. Henry could have like a major comeback year. And how do you start that? Well, maybe you get him hot with a couple of power play goals, and he gets his confidence back. And he's been there. Like, you know, if you look at Adam Henrique's numbers over the years, you know, he's played some pretty prominent on some pretty prominent lines and some prominent roles for teams, and he did not have a great year last year, but that doesn't mean that he's going to repeat last year. He could rebound, and I think that the earlier and the more they include him, the better the chances that he's going to, you know, I'm not saying he would play a feature role all year, but if you get him some confidence, you might find yourself, you've got more of a player than maybe the stats from last year suggest.
Interesting. Well, he definitely can have a better year than last year. I would agree wholeheartedly with you on that. Like, I see some people, oh, he's done. I'm like, man, I never like to just want to throw the dirt on a guy's grave, because there's a good chance, you know, he could come back and play better. He doesn't need to score 25 goals, right? But he you're right. He could get off to a good start. And all I know is Henrique has good hands. You talked about good hands around the net, Al. Like, he doesn't score a ton from distance. That's not his game. So he's a guy who's comfortable in that area, and that's what they're going to need. So I'm kind of curious. I'm also curious, listening to McDavid and listening to Knobloch, when they talked about just, you know, kind of some new looks that McFarland's going to discuss with those guys and what we might see on the power play this year.
Yeah, I think that no matter how talented your players are, they do fall into predictable roles or plays. And, you know, the Oilers, a couple of years ago, they had a breathtaking power play. And it's still, I mean, like, it's not like it's just the world's biggest garbage heap, but you look at the players on the roster and you think it could be better. And part of that is just creative thinking. And one of the great things about life is when you hear from a different voice. You know, I think that's going to be a big thing for the Oilers, not just there, but in goal too, where a different voice comes in and maybe just offers maybe even gives the same advice, but in a different way, or lets you find the solution. I think those will be good things. And the power play, you know, featuring Leon from the low part there, where everybody's moving, where it's back to Bouchard and he can thread a needle. They were making it harder for him to thread the needle. I think that you know, a fresh mind on those power play, those set plays, I think will do this team a lot of good, especially if they have early success, because for some reason, it's like when in spring training, when speedsters start stealing bases, if they steal 10 in preseason, they'll get 50 in the regular season just because they've got confidence.
Alan Mitchell, the host of The Lowdown, joins us on Sports 1440. Al, what's the plan for the nuptials this weekend?
Well, we're going to, it's funny, you've caught me. I'm on the way to the liquor store now to buy some champagne. We're going to get married tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at Karen's mom and dad's house. And then the rest of the evening will be, you know, spent doing things that are always fun. And then we're going to spend a little bit of time together over the next couple of days. And it'll be a really nice, Karen's job at the university is she'll have to be back there on Tuesday. So it's a short-lived little period here. But we'll spend part of next summer having our honeymoon. And my understanding is we're going to be moving in with you during that honeymoon period, Jason. It's going to be really nice at your house. A little cramped, but it'll be nice.
Well, Al, the thing I'm honored most is you're getting married at 2 o'clock, which is your favorite time of the day on the weekday. So that's unbelievable. What a great honor. So I look forward to that. Al, are you going to wear tails with your tuxedo? Or, you know, is your hair in a pony? Like, are you wearing a man bun? What's happening?
The man bun. I was told I'd get put on waivers if I wore the man bun.
Yeah,
so that didn't happen. But I will be in a suit, and it'll be something to see. I'll have photos on the blog and everything. Probably Karen will put some on Facebook, so it'll be out there.
Well, Al, congratulations, man. We're very happy for you. I love it that you're the anti-Kopitar. There's no, hey, just, guys, you know what? Hey, have a good weekend. Oh, by the way, we're getting married tomorrow. See you later. We'll be back on Tuesday. No season-long thing. I love it. So congratulations to you and Karen, and have a great little weekend, and we'll chat with you on Tuesday.
Thanks very much. Under promise, over deliver. That's the way you go. Thanks, buddy.